Arcadia. Not for another 12 hours would the rest of the world know of the promise that had been made to its grandchildren.
50 years, said Wainwright thoughtfully. That is a long time to wait.
For mankind, perhaps, but not for Karelin,
Stormgren answered. Only now was he beginning to realize the neatness of the Overlord's solution. It had given them the breathing space they believed they needed, and it had cut the ground from beneath the Freedom League's feet. He did not imagine that the League would capitulate, but its position would be seriously weakened. Certainly, Wainwright realized this as well.
In 50 years, he said bitterly, the damage will be done. Those who remembered our independence will be dead. Humanity will have forgotten its heritage.
Words. Empty words, thought Stormgren. The words for which men had once fought and died, and for which they would never die or fight again. And the world would be better for it. As he watched Wainwright leave, Stormgren wondered how much trouble the Freedom League would still cause in the years that lay ahead. Yet that, he thought with a lifting of his spirits, was a problem for his successor. There were some things that only time could cure. Evil men could be destroyed, but nothing could be done with good men who were deluded.
Here's your case, said Duval.
It's as good as new.
Thanks, Stormgren answered, inspecting it carefully nonetheless. Now perhaps you'll tell me what it was all about and what we are going to do next?
The physicist seemed more interested in his own thoughts.
What I can't understand, he said, is the ease with which we've got away with it. Now, if I'd been
But you're not.
Get to the point, man. What did we discover?
Ah, me, these excitable, highly strung Nordic races, sighed Duval.
What we did was to make a type of low-powered radar set. Besides radio waves of very high frequency, it used far infrared. All waves, in fact, which we were sure no creature could possibly see, however weird an eye it had.
How could you be sure of that? Asked Stormgren, becoming intrigued by the technical problem in spite of himself.
Well, we couldn't be quite sure, admitted Duval reluctantly.
But Karelin views you under normal lighting, doesn't he? So his eyes must be approximately similar to ours in spectral range. Anyway, it worked. We've proved that there is a large room behind that screen of yours. The screen is about 3 centimeters thick, and the space behind it is at least 10 meters across. We couldn't detect any echo from the far wall, but we hardly expected to with the low power, which was all we dared use. However, we did get this.
He pushed across a piece of photographic paper, on which was a single wavy line. In one spot was a kink, like the autograph of a mild earthquake.
See that little kink?
Yes.
What is it?
Only Karelin.
Good Lord. Are you sure?
It's a pretty safe guess. He's sitting, or standing, or whatever it is he does, about 2 meters on the other side of the screen. If the resolution had been a bit better, we might even have calculated his size.
Stormgren's feelings were very mixed as he stared at that scarcely visible inflection of the trace. Until now, there had been no proof that Karelin even had a material body. The evidence was still indirect, but he accepted it without question.
The other thing we had to do, said Duval, was to calculate the transmission of the screen to ordinary light. We think we've got a reasonable idea of that. Anyway, it doesn't matter if we're out even by a factor of 10. You'll realize, of course, that there's no such thing as a truly one-way glass. It's simply a matter of arranging the lights. Karelin sits in a darkened room. You are illuminated, that's all.
Duval chuckled.
Well, we are going to change that.
With the air of a conjurer producing a whole litter of white rabbits, he reached into his desk and pulled out an overgrown flashlight. The end flared out into a wide nozzle, so that the whole device looked rather like a blunderbuss. Duval grinned.
It's not as dangerous as it looks. All you have to do is to ram the nozzle against the screen and press the trigger. It gives out a very powerful beam lasting 10 seconds, and in that time you'll be able to swing it round the room and get a good view. All the light will go through the screen, and it will floodlight your friend beautifully.
It won't hurt, Karelin. Not if you aim low and sweep upwards. That will give his eyes time to adapt. I suppose he has reflexes like ours, and we don't want to blind him.
Stormgren looked at the weapon doubtfully and hefted it in his hand. For the last few weeks, his conscience had been pricking him. Karelin had always treated him with unmistakable affection, despite his occasional devastating frankness, and now that their time together was drawing to its close, he did not wish to do anything that might spoil that relationship. But the supervisor had received due warning, and Stormgren had the conviction that if the choice had been his, Karelin would long ago have shown himself. Now the decision would be made for him. When their last meeting came to its end, Stormgren would gaze upon Karelin's face. If, of course, Karelin had a face. The nervousness that Stormgren had first felt had long since passed away. Karelin was doing almost all the talking, weaving the intricate sentences which he was prone to use. Once this had seemed to Stormgren the most wonderful and certainly the most unexpected of all Karelin's gifts. Now it no longer appeared quite so marvelous, for he knew that, like most of the supervisor's abilities, it was the result of sheer intellectual power and not of any special talent. Karelin had time for any amount of literary compositions when he slowed his thoughts down to the pace of human speech.
There is no need for you or your successor to worry unduly about the Freedom League, even when it has recovered from its present despondency. It has been very quiet for the past month, and, though it will revive again, it will not be a danger for some years. Indeed, since it is always valuable to know what your opponents are doing, the League is a very useful institution. Should it ever get into financial difficulties, I might even have to subsidize it.
Stormgren had often found it difficult to tell when Karelin was joking. He kept his face impassive and continued to listen.
Very soon the League will lose another of its arguments. There has been a good deal of criticism, all somewhat childish, of the special position you have held for the past few years. I found it very valuable in the early days of my administration. But now that the world is moving along the lines that I planned, it can cease. In future, all my dealings with Earth will be indirect, and the Office of Secretary General can revert to something resembling its original form. During the next 50 years there will be many crises, but they will pass. The pattern of the future is clear enough, and one day all these difficulties will be forgotten, even to a race with memories as long as yours.
The last words were spoken with such peculiar emphasis that Stormgren immediately froze in his seat. Karelin, he was sure, never made accidental slips. Even his indiscretions were calculated to many decimal places. But there was no time to ask questions, which certainly would not be answered, before the supervisor had changed the subject again.
You have often asked me about our long-term plans, he continued. The foundation of the world state is, of course, only the first step. You will live to see its completion, but the change will be so imperceptible that few will notice it when it comes. After that, there will be a period of slow consolidation while your race becomes prepared for us, and then will come the day which we have promised. I am sorry you will not be there.
Stormgren's eyes were open, but his gaze was fixed far beyond the dark barrier of the screen. He was looking into the future, imagining the day that he would never see, when the great ships of the overlords came down at last to Earth and were thrown open to the waiting world.
On that day, continued Karelin, the human race will experience what can only be called a psychological discontinuity. But no permanent harm will be done. The men of that age will be more stable than their grandfathers. We will always have been part of their lives, and when they meet us we will not seem so strange as we would do to you.
Stormgren had never known Karelin in so contemplative a mood, but this gave him no surprise. He did not believe that he had ever seen more than a few facets of the supervisor's personality. The real Karelin was unknown, and perhaps unknowable, to human beings. And once again, Stormgren had the feeling that the supervisor's real interests were elsewhere, and that he ruled Earth with only a fraction of his mind, as effortlessly as a master of three-dimensional chess might play a game of checkers.
"And after that?" asked Stormgren softly.
"Then we can begin our real work."
"I have often wondered what that might be. Tidying up our own world and civilizing the human race is only a means. You must have an end as well. Will we ever be able to come out into space and see your universe? Perhaps even help you in your tasks?"
"You can put it that way," said Karelin.
And now his voice held a clear yet inexplicable note of sadness that left Stormgren strangely perturbed.
"But suppose, after all, your experiment fails with man? We have known such things in our own dealings with primitive human races. Surely you have had your failures, too."
"Yes," said Karelin, so softly that Stormgren could scarcely hear him. "We have had our failures."
"And what do you do then?"
"We wait and try again."
There was a pause lasting perhaps 5 seconds. When Karelin spoke again, his words were so unexpected that for a moment Stormgren did not react.
"Goodbye, Ricky."
Karelin had tricked him. Probably it was already too late. Stormgren's paralysis lasted only a moment. Then with a single swift, well-practiced movement, he whipped out the flash gun and jammed it against the glass. The pine trees came almost to the edge of the lake, leaving along its border only a narrow strip of grass a few meters wide. Every evening, when it was warm enough, Stormgren, despite his 90 years, would walk briskly along this strip to the landing stage, watch the sunlight die upon the water, and then return to the house before the chill night wind came up from the forest. The simple ritual gave him much contentment, and he would continue it as long as he had the strength. Far away, over the lake, something was coming in from the west, flying low and fast. Aircraft were uncommon in these parts, unless one counted the transpolar lines which must be passing overhead every hour of the day and night. But there was never any sign of their presence, save an occasional vapor trail high against the blue of the stratosphere. This machine was a small helicopter, and it was coming towards him with obvious determination. Stormgren glanced along the beach and saw that there was no chance of escape. Then he shrugged his shoulders and sat down on the wooden bench at the head of the jetty. The reporter was so deferential that Stormgren found it surprising. He had almost forgotten that he was not only an elder statesman, but, outside his own country, almost a mythical figure.
"Mr. Stormgren," the intruder began, "I'm very sorry to bother you, but I wonder if you'd care to comment on something we've just heard about the overlords."
Stormgren frowned slightly. After all these years, he still shared Karelin's dislike for that word.
"I do not think," he said, "that I can add a great deal to what has been written elsewhere."
The reporter was watching him with a curious intentness.
"I thought that you might. A rather strange story has just come to our notice. It seems that nearly 30 years ago, one of the Science Bureau's technicians made some remarkable equipment for you. We wondered if you could tell us anything about it."
For a moment, Stormgren was silent, his mind going back into the past. He was not surprised that the secret had been discovered. Indeed, it was surprising that it had been kept so long. He rose to his feet and began to walk back along the jetty, the reporter following a few paces behind.
"This story," he said, "contains a certain amount of truth. On my last visit to Karelin's ship, I took some apparatus with me, in the hope that I might be able to see the supervisor. It was rather a foolish thing to do, but, well, I was only 60 at the time."
He chuckled to himself and then continued.
"It's not much of a story to have brought you all this way. You see, it didn't work.
You saw nothing?
No, nothing at all. I'm afraid you'll have to wait. But after all, there are only 20 years to go.
20 years to go. Yes, Karelin had been right. By then, the world would be ready. As it had not been when he had spoken that same lie to Duval 30 years ago. Karelin had trusted him, and Stormgren had not betrayed his faith. He was as sure as he could be of anything that the supervisor had known his plan from the beginning, and had foreseen every moment of its final act. Why else had that enormous chair been already empty when the circle of light blazed upon it? In the same moment, he had started to swing the beam, fearing that he was too late. The metal door, twice as high as a man, was closing swiftly when he first caught sight of it, closing swiftly, yet not quite swiftly enough. Yes, Karelin had trusted him, had not wished him to go down into the long evening of his life haunted by a mystery he could never solve. Karelin dared not defy the unknown powers above him. Were they of that same race also? But he had done all that he could. If he had disobeyed them, they could never prove it. It was the final proof, Stormgren knew, of Karelin's affection for him. Though it might be the affection of a man for a devoted and intelligent dog, it was nonetheless sincere for that, and Stormgren's life had given him few greater satisfactions.
We have had our failures.
Yes, Karelin, that was true. And were you the one who failed before the dawn of human history? It must have been a failure indeed, thought Stormgren, for its echoes to roll down all the ages, to haunt the childhood of every race of man. Even in 50 years, could you overcome the power of all the myths and legends of the world? Yet Stormgren knew there would be no second failure. When the two races met again, the overlords would have won the trust and friendship of mankind, and not even the shock of recognition could undo that work. They would go together into the future, and the unknown tragedy that must have darkened the past would be lost forever down the dim corridors of prehistoric time. And Stormgren hoped that when Karelin was free to walk once more on Earth, he would one day come to these northern forests and stand beside the grave of the first man ever to be his friend. Part 2. The Golden Age. Chapter 5. "This is the day," whispered the radios in 100 tongues. "This is the day," said the headlines of 1,000 newspapers. "This is the day," thought the cameramen as they checked and rechecked the equipment gathered round the vast empty space upon which Karelin's ship would be descending. There was only the single ship now, hanging above New York. Indeed, as the world had just discovered, the ships above man's other cities had never existed. The day before, the great fleet of the overlords had dissolved into nothingness, fading like mist beneath the morning sun.